Life Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. Catherine Murdoch's Wisconsin-based series of middle-grade novels was supposed to be done by now. The series, which started with the novel Dairy Queen, related the experiences of a high school girl named DJ Schwenk, who played high school football and basketball in the fictional town of Red Bend. But after the trilogy concluded, Murdoch couldn't let the characters disappear, so DJ Schwenk returns in a supporting role in Murdoch's new book, Heaven is Paved with Oreos. The central character in the story is actually the would-be girlfriend of Schwenk's younger brother, Curtis. It brings readers back to central Wisconsin as Sarah Zorn works to figure out her relationship with Curtis and with her grandmother, whom she accompanies on a pilgrimage to Rome. Murdoch herself returned to real-life Wisconsin recently, where she spoke with some real-life school students in Heartland, and we tagged along. Nice to see you again.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start with what just took place in this library. We're sitting here in the library of the University Lake School, and you've just had this about an hour-long experience with the students here. What do you get out of coming to a school like this and doing a program like this? This is not about selling books, right?
No, it's not about selling books. It's gratifying on a bunch of levels. One, when I was a kid, if I had had the opportunity to meet an author, I would have given my right arm. I will never forget that the librarian from our town met Robert Cormier at a librarian book event, and I touched her like the way someone who's met Elvis has, he sat here once. George Washington slept here. So I just remember that excitement of realizing that there are authors and you could be this. So there's lighting up those kids. And then there are the kids who aren't readers, but who you can see are really getting turned on by the process. And, oh, can I read your book? I've never read a book by myself. I want to read. And that is where the universe comes together. When you get a kid who's been a reluctant reader and you can see that now they're going to try it and you might open up the world for them.
Is demystification the right word for both cases, the demystification of the author as a person and the demystification of books as an accessible thing?
Wow, demystification. I'm thinking more, this is really heady for me because I think about books as very mystical. So, and the more I get into the writing process, the more abstract it becomes for me. And my son had a teacher in second grade who said, I don't know how kids learn how to read. They just do. It's magical. And that's, I feel like that. I don't know how writing works. It's just magical. So maybe I'm demystifying it for others, but I certainly don't feel it's clear in my own head.
There were a group of, 80 kids in here, and maybe three of them, maybe four of them, maybe five of them asked the question in a different, each of them in a slightly different way, where do you get your ideas? What do you take from that question?
Well, I think for a lot of people, not just kids, but for adults as well, that there is a mystical belief that stories start with ideas. And I think that's true, but what a lot of people who aren't writers don't realize is that that's just one part of it, that there's a whole bunch of craft that goes into writing in addition to the art. The idea is the art. And if you work at it, the art almost becomes secondary to the craft, that everyone can come up with an idea, but you have to put in a lot of hours. Michelangelo, it took him 4 years to paint the Sistine. Not that I'm Michelangelo, that's not my point. You can have an idea, but ideas come from, and what I try to keep saying is ideas come from a lot of different places. It's not that flash of inspiration and you see the story outlined before you. You have to put in the hours.
In a way, it's a little inconvenient that the first book, that Dairy Queen, actually started with a dream.
Yes and no, because I've actually made it into a slide presentation where I photograph the dream that I had about a girl playing football is one sentence in the Dairy Queen book. And when I do slide presentations, I have a photograph of that page and that one sentence highlighted and the math, and I calculate, do the math equation on how many words are in the book. So the inspiration was like 0.01% of the book. So the idea is a very small part. 99% of it is hard work.
This is like the iconic image of the universe with the little the sign that says, you are here.
Wow, yes. I was thinking more about, there's a myth, and I was in screenwriting for a while, and Sylvester Stallone wrote the screenplay for Rocky in 6 weeks. And if you say that to a screenwriter, they come out of their chair, and they're like, that screenplay was shopped for years. It had a whole bunch of people. It's not that you have an idea and you sit down and you write and it's done. it's a much more technical process than that. And in a way, I find that immensely reassuring because it means that you do not have to be a – you don't wait for the thunderbolt to hit you. Just if you work at it, you don't have to be a genius. You just have to be a hard worker.
You, in the presentation today, talked about the idea of the sequel as being the author's effort to make sure the characters that he or she created are doing all right. You kind of swore that 3 was it for the Dairy Queen characters, and here is number 4. Were you not sure they were okay?
I swore that 3 was it for DJ. And 3 is it for DJ. And if you read the Dairy Queen trilogy, she has this amazing character arc over 3 books. And she's really launched as a, I hate to use the word adult because that has all this baggage, but she's launched as a functional human being at the end of the book. But there were other characters, particularly her little brother, who I was worried about. And the reason I volunteered to write the sequel is I was worried about DJ's little brother. And so I wrote the sequel to show how he was doing, even though he doesn't have a huge part in the book. He's a very critical part. And he doesn't have a huge part in Heaven is Paved with Oreos, but he's a critical part of the story. And I still want to keep making sure that he's okay because I really care about that kid. And he just needs to learn how to talk.
Well, and I wonder if there's something to the idea of characters in books for especially the grades that you target as being more than just characters on a literary page to the people that consume them, that they inhabit a larger part of the world for a kid than maybe an adult reader might see.
Oh, I totally agree with that, that even the books that I read now for kids, the good books. The example that I'm bringing up that I mentioned in the session was How to Catch a Bogle. The main character of that book lives with me. She's such a compelling character, and I'm so vested in making sure that she's okay, and I can't wait for the sequel to come out to find out how she's doing. The neat thing about children's literature of young adult and adult literature is that no matter what else is happening in the story, you have this arc of the main character grows up. And kids and adults are looking for direction of, you know, how do I do this? How do I live? How do I function as an adult? How do I do this better? And a good story will do that in a way that is not preachy at all and is hopefully not even noticeable. But you get that message across. And that's why the characters stay with kids is because, oh, if I know how Harriet the Spy would handle this situation. I know how Hermione, okay, if I can just be more like Hermione, I can ...
Well, and I think one of the remarkable things that transpires in Heaven is Paved with Oreos is Sarah, your protagonist, coming to terms with the reality of her grandmother. And it seems like an underrated part of growing up is not just understanding that your parents are flawed, but the people who often really do get a free pass, the grandparents, are real people too.
The relationship that Sarah has with her grandmother is so it is not the relationship that I had with my grandmother, but it is so meaningful, and it is that recognition that people are fallible and you have to figure out how to deal with it. You can't just push it aside. Z, her name is Azalea, but everyone calls her Z, in the book, she was such a compelling character for me. And I really, at times, had to work to silence her because she was trying to take over the story. And she actually writes one section of the book, and she writes a letter to Sarah, and it's a quarter of the book. And I checked into a hotel. I was writing, and I really needed to get this book done. And I checked into a hotel, and it was 1 o'clock in the morning, and I'm sitting at my computer, and I'm writing the letter, and I'm crying just because the letter meant so much to me. So, wow, I broke out in goosebumps just telling that story. But that she is really, really real to me. She is not based on anyone I know, except I will say, I didn't mention this to the kids. I was in Whole Foods a couple of years ago, and there was a woman in the checkout line, an older woman, and I looked at her and thought, what makes you tick? And that was where Z started, is a woman in the supermarket.
And of course, Whole Foods does not exist in small town Wisconsin.
No.
Well, and along those lines, you have kind of created this alternate rural Wisconsin. Does it at all, when you are in real life rural Wisconsin, give you pause to think of the alternate universe Wisconsin that you have created?
I'm glad that it's an alternate universe. I really went out of my way to make sure that none of the place names are real place names, which is hard in Wisconsin because there are a lot of place names. And for a long time, the town that DJ lived in was called Red Lake. And there isn't a Red Lake, Wisconsin, but there's a Red Lake, Minnesota. So I wanted Wolf Lake, which would be really cool. But there's a Wolf Lake, Wisconsin that has three houses in it, but I'm just, oh, come on, give me Wolf Lake. And there's a Prophetstown, Illinois, but there's not a Prophetstown, Wisconsin. So I got to use Prophetstown, which is such an appropriate name for the town where Z lives. But it is sort of a mythic universe, and it's intentionally mythic because I want it to be universal enough that a lot of people can identify with it. And I get a lot of communication from people who say Red Bend is just like my town, and they live in Brooklyn. And you're like, well, actually, it's probably not. But it's good enough for, it's broad enough for everyone to appreciate.
There's a Red Hook in Brooklyn, right? Is that right?
I'd forgotten about that. Yes. But I don't think Red Bend and Red Hook have a lot to do with each other.
It is something to be sitting in the middle of a middle school library and knowing that it's still full of books. And one of them, I'm looking over your shoulder, is actually about Henry Kissinger, which is kind of surreal, actually. But there is something, I don't know, as an outsider, that seemed encouraging about a room full of people who were really kind of hanging on every word, talking about books in this era where we often hear that, you know, books' shelf life is limited.
Story is eternal. There is always story. There will always be story. How that story is conveyed is a bit in flux right now. I am immensely prejudiced toward paper books. I'm not a big ebook person, in part because I love the experience of holding it, and I love the experience of knowing how long it is until the end, which is just not the same with an ebook. You don't know how much further you have. And it really is remarkable how much a part of my consciousness that is that you pace yourself from where you are vertically in the book. And I'm reading a book right now, and I'm like, this is really good, but I'm not sure I can do another inch and a half of pages. And if you can get kids reading, that's what it's all about.
And did you hear how interested the kids were in the cover of all of your books? I mean, and I don't know that you would have that kind of conversation about an ebook.
No. There.
Well, Catherine Gilbert Murdoch, thank you so much, as always, and come back and see us again.
Thank you so much. This was wonderful.
Catherine Murdoch's latest middle grade novel, set in the fictional town of Red Bend, Wisconsin, is Heaven is Paved with Oreos. It's a corollary to her Dairy Queen series. We spoke with her in the real-life town of Heartland, Wisconsin, where she was visiting students at the University Lake School. You can find more about the books at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. That's Friday's edition of the show. We're produced by Stephanie Lecce, Dan Harmon, and Bonnie North, with assistance from Nathan Royster and Eleanor Peterson. I'm Mitch Teich. Have a terrific weekend, and thanks so much for tuning in today. Do join us tomorrow and Sunday afternoon at 3 for Lake Effect Weekend from WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh Air is next. It's 11 o'clock.